If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Liz Schulman joins us again. For the 79th time, the English teacher at Evanston Township High School. She's also in the School of Education and Social Policy at Northwestern University and has been kind enough over the last few years to give us a maybe ground-eye view of what it's like in an American classroom these days. Welcome back, Liz. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. So lunch break for you right now?
Yes. Yep.
There's a couple things I want to talk to you about. One is we've alluded to a book that you may have coming out one of these days. There's also an op-ed that you have co-authored that'll appear in Monday's Tribune. Where should we start, Liz?
We can start with the book. I'm super excited about it.
Tell me about it.
So it's been in the works for a while. It's stories from the high school English classroom. So it's about a lot of what we've talked about when I've come on the show. It's called Inside School Today, and it's really about what our students are dealing with, heightened anxiety and depression and phones and AI and coming back to school after the pandemic and ways that we can help them.
Did you start the book before or after the pandemic?
I started writing about some of these issues before the pandemic, but it kind of gelled into the book since.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, if for nothing else, then the last 6 years have really been interesting, or 5 years in academia, because of the hybrid learning, all of the complications of that, the lack of learning, the lack of social or interpersonal development. And then you had phones that we all had to deal with. We talked about that. And now you're writing the book thinking I'm good to go. Oh, wait, here comes AI. Now I got to write about that. I mean, that must have been the challenge for you along the way, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and this is partly why I'm so excited about it, because most of the books about schools and about students are not by teachers. And so I'm hoping that this book is going to help fill that gap, because we just don't have a lot of discourse about what is happening inside the classroom on a day-to-day basis.
And what would I be surprised to learn? I mean, tell me what maybe would surprise me, or what's a principal issue in your classroom?
Well, I think one of the principal issues is how important it is to keep reading literature in the English classroom, and how it helps students develop their empathy and compassion, which I think has dwindled a bit given how much we're all on screens. And so it's kind of about how we can restore this idea of empathy and compassion through the literature and through identifying with these characters that the students read. And I'm seeing it this year. I'm doing a lot more on paper than I have in years, and it's making a huge difference with their engagement with the books that we're reading, and also just the work that they're doing.
I think a lot of us think getting kids to read is the end all. That's just, you're telling me, a means by which you then develop empathy and all of these other social skills.
Yeah, and talking about the book, I mean, there's research that says that when you get to know a character in the book, it's like your brain doesn't know if that character is real or not. And so as you get to know their thoughts and feelings, and you're identifying your own thoughts and feelings and relating to some of the ideas in the book, it makes for very good discussions in the classroom. And that's what I think is needed more these days.
You said you're doing it more in paper. You mean asking them to read a paper text or hand write out a paper? What do you mean by you're doing it more in paper?
Yeah, so we're not using the Chromebooks as much to do like worksheets and handouts there. I am copying them in the copy room, and they are handwriting them. And it's been really interesting to see more teachers doing this year, because for example, when they are working on a worksheet and using the old-fashioned pencil and paper, they will ask each other the question, ask for the answer, ask for help. Whereas when they're on the Chromebook, their first instinct is to Google the answer. And so now they're actually engaging more with each other. So it's been really great to see that shift in the classroom after so many years of being on screens.
Do you find yourself an outlier in that? I know you said other teachers are maybe doing this. Maybe do you find yourself an innovator in this?
I don't. There's a lot of us who are starting to go back to paper and pencil. Yeah.
Well, do you have a mimeograph machine, and is it fun to smell the ink on the pages when you hand them out?
Right, exactly, yeah.
That was our experience when we were younger. So what is the level of engagement? And you make it sound like it's improved. You, in the past, have told us that your students at Evanston High and also at Northwestern, though, are relatively engaged, though, right?
Yeah, and I would say that it is more this year than I have seen, because we're doing more on paper, because we no longer have the issue with the cell phones. When we are reading a book, I don't have to be wondering if they are hiding the phone behind their book, like they did many years ago.
Yeah. What about, what are you reading or learning in your class right now? What are you teaching the kids?
So with the ninth graders, with the freshmen, we are in the middle of Romeo and Juliet, which they are enjoying very much. I mean, it's so timely and timeless. There's so many things to relate to. And again, as they're getting to know Romeo and Juliet as people and these families who hate each other. And then with my 12th graders, with the seniors, we're reading Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried About the Vietnam War.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of classics. That book is still in the curriculum, huh?
Yes, yeah.
Because some books are out of favor, some are in favor. About Romeo and Juliet, the language isn't a barrier for the kids. I mean, that's a 500-year-old text. I think we looked it up the other day. Shakespeare's born 456 years ago, so that's 400-year-old prose. It still carries weight. It still resonates.
It does, and we, as we read it, we're listening to actors act it out, because of course Shakespeare was not meant to be read sitting in a classroom. He's meant to be performed, and then we also watch a couple different movie versions, and so the students are actually hearing the language in several different ways, and we look at the 1968 Zeffirelli version, which is a classic. And then the 1996 one with Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio, which is a modern one, but they do speak in the original Shakespearean language, which is fun for them.
Do you see the story a week ago that the attention span of kids these days is such that teachers can't even get them to watch the movie?
I did. And I think that that's yet another reason to be doing more on paper. I think, you know, we have all this research coming out about how the learning is really better when they are not on the screens all day.
Producer Neil, jump in here for just a second. So there's a 75-minute version of, is it Romeo and Juliet, Neil?
At Chicago Shakes, there's a 75-minute version of Hamlet for shorter attention spans, and it's playing until February 28th, but I hear it's very good, and it condenses the show by removing a few characters, but it still has the core elements so that kids can really learn Shakespeare, as Liz is talking about, and just learn the old art form and also just really kind of get deep into literature.
That sounds like an endorsement of it. Do you subscribe to that, Liz?
Yeah, I mean, I don't show the whole movie. Like when we watch it in class, we'll read a scene and then we will watch a scene. But I think what's so wonderful about Shakespeare is that there are so many different ways to see it performed. I've seen a hip-hop Othello play performed here in Chicago many years ago. So there's so many different things that you can do.
They do a drunk version of it in Chicago now too, but I guess if you've been around for 400 years, everything is possible. Let's talk a little bit about AI and what are the challenges of that. Is that maybe as problematic as the phone issue was? How is that impacting you all?
Yeah, it does continue to be a big problem. I think, again, doing more on paper and doing work on paper in the classroom is helping to prevent that. Because the students, I really feel bad for them. I think that they have been getting mixed messages, and I think that they have been put in a very confusing position in our society of not understanding if AI is good for them or if it is bad for them, for their education. And so, again, I think doing so much more in the classroom, being present with each other in our community, is really helps. I just spoke with a student this morning about using AI for something that he did on the computer. So it does continue to be a problem.
Well, in that conversation, were you reprimanding or correcting the child or guiding them on how to use AI?
Well, I had to explain to him that this particular assignment, AI was not, generative AI was not to be used. And, usually they will admit it, when you approach them and talk to them about it. But then we have to have this kind of confusing conversation, you know, use it over here, don't use it over there. I think it's hard for them, especially given that so many advertisements are targeting young people to use it, and then in some classes they use it more than in other classes, and so I think it's hard for them, and I continue to try to explain to them that their original thoughts matter, that they shouldn't ever feel that they have to outsource their own thinking.
I wonder if you should play for them the Super Bowl ad that was about artificial intelligence and advertising, that when I use AI, what I might get is not the internet scraped and distilled into a compact answer, but in fact, a commercial message built into the answer. But one takeaway was how obvious an AI version, at least now, is of an answer to a question. You know, it's like, that's a good question. I think you're on the right track. Here's one way to look at it. You know, those sort of sentences and that sort of structure. And the ad's kind of funny. It's also kind of a red flag. I wonder if you should play that for your students.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, because there are also some other apps where they can, I think, like humanize. AI is one of them, where it will make it sound more human. You can put in whatever, like make it sound like a ninth grader with a B+ average.
Really?
And so that's also where it gets tricky, because they're getting messages that's okay, when teachers are kind of left on the front lines explaining, well, in certain cases, that it's cheating. It's not using your own thoughts.
We're talking to Liz Shulman from Evanston and also a professor at Northwestern. The piece that's going to run Monday in the Tribune, I wanted to just ask you a little bit about it, because this isn't the first time you've co-written something with a student, right?
Right.
Okay. Give me a minute or two on that. And also I wanted to ask you what your general thought was, and if you experienced this, of students engaged in walkouts because they're protesting something in their community. We'll pick it up here in a minute with Liz Shulman. This is WGN. Liz Shulman's on a line, an English teacher at Evanston Township High, and she's in the School of Education and Social Policy at Northwestern University. I tell people, Liz, that you teach and then you teach people how to teach. Is that a fair assessment of your life and job?
Yeah, it is. It's a good assessment.
Let's not just do as I say then. And which group of students is more challenging or more rewarding for you?
Oh, you know, they both are challenging and rewarding. I mean, they're in such different stages in their lives. I feel really fortunate to be able to be with both. And also even just within the high school, to be able to teach ninth graders and 12th graders who are also at such a different stage in their life, is pretty cool too.
I think your students are the fortunate ones. Talk to me about this article that we're going to see in the paper next week.
Yeah, so it'll be in the Chicago Tribune on Monday. So I co-wrote it with William, who is a high school student in California, and we had co-written another piece for the Boston Globe last year. But it's about AI in schools and about how students and teachers are on the front lines of what's going on. We actually open the op-ed talking about Descartes' famous line, I think, therefore I am, and that this idea of thinking should really be the engine for schools. And if students are not thinking for themselves because of AI, that we're concerned about what that means.
Even the country's largest teachers' unions, the American Federation of Teachers, et cetera, have sold out, you all say. What are you talking about there?
Yeah, the American Federation of Teachers and the National Educators Association also have signed contracts, as have many school districts, with AI companies. And I think it's always important to remember that AI was not designed for schools. It was not created by educators, by people who have degrees and background in education. It was designed by people who are in tech companies and who want to make a profit. And so I think that schools have been put in the very difficult position of signing contracts with these tech companies to bring AI into schools. But tech companies have always wanted to get inside of schools. That's been happening since the 1960s. So in some ways, it's not new. But what is new is that students are using AI to do the thinking for them when they're in school, precisely to learn how to think for themselves.
I saw an app where it'll show you how to do your math assignment. If you were in a challenging class, which might be Geometry 101 or maybe second semester, a year of calculus. Either way, you just type in the problem, and then it gives you not only the answer, but the step-by-step of how you got the answer. And you get that in 1 second. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a unfortunate thing for the math teacher and the math student. It's also a helpful thing. I mean, if that were to show you what you needed to do and you could learn from that, then it's not a cheat, it's an aid. I'm trying to score that. What's your thought about that, Liz?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the technology is useful. I think that the line needs to be drawn when they're using it to do it for them. So if they used it in that case you're talking about for a math problem and they got the steps, and then if they then went back and did other math problems where they're learning the process, I think that's the big issue is, are they learning the process of problem solving so that when they need to, they will be able to do that on their own. But certainly it can help. I just, we just don't know how much they're being reliant on it. I mean, I had a student tell me that she can't leave the house in the morning unless she asks AI what she should wear. And also that we're dealing with younger brains that are still developing. And so I think that we need to be really careful with how much they use it.
Back to Romeo and Juliet for just a minute. What are some of the things that you learn when you read Romeo and Juliet? What are some of the themes, or I don't know if lessons is the right word, but how do you answer that?
Yeah, I think there's so many. We learn what happens when young people rush without thinking, that they don't listen to the consequences. The older people in the play are telling them to slow down. The whole play takes place in 5 days. They are very quick to do these things without thinking. And we also learn how the young people feel alone. The adults essentially abandon them. They're abandoned by their parents and by the nurse and by Friar Lawrence. It's really unfortunate. And we also learn about arranged marriage. How much should you have say in who you date and who you're with? I mean, these are issues that my students really like talking about.
Did any of your students walk out in protest for the immigration policies in Chicago or across the country?
Yeah, they did. They did. And I try to use it as a teachable moment. I think there's so much to talk with them about. I think that, if you look at any protest history, there are always leaders who are taking chances, and there are always consequences to walking out. And so when students asked me, should I walk out, I told them, I think you need to think about how much you believe in this cause, because if it's really important to you, what do you care about getting one unexcused absence? You know, I think it's a good lesson in standing up for something, because as we look at these movements in the past and people were going to prison, I mean, there are always consequences for standing up. And so I think it was a good opportunity for them to learn that.
Hmm. What's the title of the book and when does it come out, Liz?
So the title of the book is Inside School Today. That might change, but I will let you know. It is going to be coming out in the fall of 2027 in time with the new school year.
Okay. Well, it can't come out soon enough for me, and I think for a lot of people. You seem so perfectly dialed in on this, and I'm so glad you share your thoughts with us, Liz. I hope we can visit again sometime soon.
Thank you so much, John.